Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, as always, good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. The good news today is kind of sobering, but it's pretty much what we've expected for a long time now. And that's that what we thought was the case in terms of the Obama administration's misleading us on what happened in Benghazi seems to be even more ironclad than ever. New emails obtained by Fox News show that by 6 o'clock our time, Eastern time, on September 11th itself, so literally just hours after this Benghazi terrorist attack happened on our consulate, we not only knew it was a terrorist attack, we knew it was a terrorist attack because the people who perpetrated it took credit for it. Ansar al-Sharia was taking credit for it on Facebook and Twitter, and so somehow this got morphed into the pathetic explanation of blaming it on the obscure video that had been out for months. The administration is going to have to keep answering for this, because this is not just coming out on Fox. All the mainstream media outlets are picking up on this. And once again, their story's full of holes. And if they had just told the truth, this never would have happened.
Yeah, a couple of interesting points in there. That first sensitive but unclassified report that went to folks in Washington, including the White House Situation Room, said that Ansar al-Sharia, a group affiliated with al-Qaeda, claims responsibility for Benghazi attack. At that time, Ambassador Stevens was still alive. We were being told who was claiming responsibility for this before he was dead, which gives you an idea of just how quickly this news has gotten through there. This morning, as I was going through all of Susan Rice's comments, it's rather fascinating that the comments from the administration got less accurate with time. Obama was very quick to point out to the Rose Garden statement that he used the word terror. Yes, you know, one time at the very end, he makes a generic reference to acts of terror. He also made references, clearly referring to the YouTube tape about no act of insult of any religion justifies these sorts of things, yada, yada, yada. But that first Rose Garden statement was vague and generic and maybe covering the bases. Conceivably, at that point early on, maybe they didn't know precisely what's going on. Now, we know that at least within, while the attack was ongoing, they now have this one piece of evidence saying, look, this is not some movie protest or movie review gone wrong. This is a terror group affiliated with al-Qaeda claiming that they're attacking us. So Obama's Rose Garden statement may have just been playing it safe. What's really inexcusable is Rice and Jay Carney in the subsequent days getting more incorrect and emphasizing it was the tape, it was the tape, it was the tape, when in fact, no. This is how the U.S. diplomats were describing the attack while it's ongoing. And so, like, the idea that there was nothing in there about the YouTube video, there was nothing, you know, pointing to that, and now the State Department says there was no actual protest part of this attack. It just started out a straight-up attack. And why is this the good martini? Because I think this now means this will be an issue in the remaining 2 weeks of this election. As soon as Obama stops doing interviews with Jay Leno and MTV, which are his planned interviews for the remainder of the week, he should get hard questions on this. Why did the explanation from the White House get less accurate with time and point more and more directly towards a, you know, flat-out false explanation for what happened there?
On to our bad martini now. And, Jim, we talked about Todd Akin earlier in the week and how it looks like in the latest polls he's just not able to catch up, at least at this point, against Claire McCaskill, and that's a golden pickup opportunity that seems to be slipping away as a result of his rape comments back in August. When that happened, Jim, wouldn't you expect just about every other Republican Senate campaign, particularly those who believe that the only exception for abortion should be the life of the mother, to be ready for that question? Well, in Indiana, Richard Murdoch defeated Dick Lugar in the primary, so this is a seat that Republicans are in a tight race in that they're just trying to hold. This wouldn't be a pickup opportunity. The issue of what about abortion in the case of rape came up at the debate this week, and here was Richard Murdoch's answer.
I know there are some who disagree, and I respect their point of view, but I believe that life begins at conception. The only exception I have to have an abortion is in that case of the life of the mother. I struggled with it myself for a long time, but I came to realize life is that gift from God, and I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it is something that God intended to happen.
And so he's now basically under huge fire for suggesting that, that God intended for people to be conceived under the conditions of rape. Jim, it was a good answer until the last line, but the last line is going to get him into a whole lot of trouble, and in a race that he's narrowly leading, it's interesting to see how this might play out in a state that's trending very, very red in all the other races right now. I don't understand why it's that hard to just say life is precious, life should be protected at all stages unless a life is needed to be taken to save another life. It's a pretty simple response, even on a very, very tender and sensitive subject.
Well, you know, Greg, I'm glad you played the audio for that, because this was not the voice of a wide-eyed ideologue screaming with passionate fury about the righteousness of his view. That was a, you know, humble, even tone he was speaking with. The alternative, by the way, is that, you know, so God doesn't value those created by a conception of in a case of rape? Really? God makes an exception for that? Democrats in Indiana want really, really hard to say that Richard Murdoch is some crazy lunatic who has nutty ideas about this. What I find kind of fascinating about this is that you talk to pro-lifers and you talk about the circumstances of, you know, what do you do in cases of rape? And boy, oh boy, you know, some of them, a lot of them struggle with this. They really hate the idea of telling a woman who's been raped that she has to take that child to term. On the other hand, they do believe that all life is precious, and they don't believe that the horrific acts of the father should necessarily mean that life is worthless. It's a moral conundrum, and they talk about it in tones that, you know, express that great conflict. Greg, one, it's very revealing that no question, as far as I can tell, was asked at that debate about partial birth abortion.
Right.
Partial birth abortion has not come up in any of the presidential debates or any of the – you know, if abortion in the cases of rape is the toughest call for the pro-life community, you would think that partial birth abortion would be where the pro-choice community could at least cringe a little bit, folks. At least show that you have a certain amount of internal conflict, that you can see shades of gray in this, because otherwise – look, we know who the ideologues on this issue are. We know who the folks who are you know, marching in lockstep and see no inner conflict or shades of gray in this sort of thing. It's NARAL. It's the pro-choicers. And I have yet to see, you know, Biden or Obama or, you know, the self-professed Catholic Biden or Obama or any one of these guys ever say, you know, I really have moral problems with partial birth abortion. Every single – they never, you know, vote for the bans on those sorts of things. They always say that they're completely okay with it. And it's, you know, Bill Clinton managed to defuse, you know, managed to get away with this issue by saying he wanted abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. And that was a, you know, a formulation that a lot of Americans seemed to be okay with it because they didn't want unsafe abortions. They were not comfortable with illegal abortions, or at least, a significant plurality of Americans felt that way. But they also didn't really like abortion and felt like it was a morally difficult choice, even under the best of circumstances. And so they liked the idea of it being rare. The problem is Democrats never really want to do anything to make it rare. And in fact, they're perfectly okay with making it, you know, increasingly common. So I think what's frustrating is not really so much Murdoch's answer, which is, you know, I think, you know, generally appropriate in its tone up until maybe that last sentence. It's the coverage of it, which is basically saying he's, you know, now some it's the Spanish Inquisition. As Monty Python reminded us, no one ever expects the Spanish Inquisition.
You pointed out the safe, legal, and rare argument by Democrats. Rare is now not even in the platform. They took it out of the platform,
yeah.
And they put in taxpayer-funded abortions. And if you really want to talk about radical on this issue, this hasn't gotten much oxygen. But when he was in the state Senate, Barack Obama was in favor of not trying to save the lives of babies who survived botched abortions. You talk about radical. That's about as radical as it gets. I mean, that's life outside the womb that he was perfectly content to let die. It doesn't get much more craven than that. So,
a grim bad martini today, Greg.
Yeah, to say the least. On to martini number three now. And the people that both parties probably want not to see on the stage, and Republicans certainly don't want to see either one on the stage, Donald Trump is promising something very, very big, very, 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 very important, very, very big. You're going to want to cover this.
Huge, Greg, huge. By the way, it's not pronounced H-U-G-E. It's capital Y, capital U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-G-E. Huge.
So he's got that. Gloria Allred's in Massachusetts court today trying to lift a gag order in a case that Mitt Romney testified in years ago. It's speculation. It's about the former head of Staples, which was, of course, a company that Bain Capital rescued. What could possibly be in there? I don't know, but I'm sure it's going to, if it's Gloria Allred, paint Mitt Romney as some sort of misogynist in some bizarre way. The rumors from Trump that he has now denied range everything from that Obama dealt coke while he was in college to there's something really damaging in divorce papers that were drawn up between him and Michelle but were never acted on. Either way, I really just hope both of these people go away, but of course they're not going to because they don't know how to do that.
You're going to regret that, Greg. This is going to be huge. You can tell I really like doing my Trump impression. On the Allred thing, apparently Romney's personal lawyer said last night that regarding this divorce case, they have no problem unsealing the testimony in the divorce case. So whatever, the Romney campaign clearly doesn't think there's anything in it that's all that controversial or damaging in there. The really quick run through, an ace over at Ace of Spades did a really good examination of what was publicly known about this. One of the guys who was the founders of Staples ended up having a very messy divorce back in the 1980s. Romney apparently testified in their divorce case about the value of Staples. The ex-wife ended up selling her shares before Staples went public. Staples ended up being worth a lot of money, and she ended up making a very bad decision. In this messy, ugly divorce, there have been all kinds of charges and countercharges. Apparently every 10 years, people believe this is Gloria Allred, not even looking to damage Romney, looking for this former Staples executive to pay more in alimony to get this story to go away. How this is going to turn into some game changer or you know, event that's going to get people to think differently of Romney back in the 1980s is not clear in the slightest. This doesn't strike me as the Bush DUI, in which is this sudden revelation that makes people, you know, doubt whether they can trust the challenger or something. So I don't think anything's going to come out of the Allred thing. As for Trump, I mean, who the heck knows? He says that this is, you know, what he's announcing is unlike any of the rumored reports that have been out there. Regarding the Obama divorce papers, I thought this was, you know, if not well known, certainly was part of the public record, that back around the year 2000, the Obama's marriage hit some rough patches, that Obama had run for Congress, people may recall, against incumbent Democrat Bobby Rush. A lot of people told him it was a bad idea, that he was a little-known state senator taking on a well-established incumbent. Obama went into considerable personal debt in that as a result of that bid, and his credit cards were getting rejected and things like that. Michelle Obama didn't think it was a good idea. Obama went forward with it, and it turned out to be a rough patch. Look, as far as anyone can tell, they worked through it, and I have no idea how, barring some, you know, presuming it is the divorce papers, and again, Trump says it's not that, I just think people are going to evaluate Obama on what he's done as president, not anything on any marital issues they had back in, you know, the late 90s or the year 2000. So probably by the time people listen to this, we'll have some idea of what it is. We don't know what the hype's going to turn out to be, but I can guarantee you, Greg, if nothing else, at least one man in New York will be totally convinced that it is huge.
Absolutely right. So, yeah, I don't think this is going to be a big deal. But keep in mind that the reason Obama got elected to the Senate was largely because of released divorce papers. Blair Hull, the Democratic front runner at the time, and then ultimately Jack Ryan got forced out of the race, and we ended up with a Alan Keyes mess, which is part of the reason Obama had such a meteoric rise in national politics. But we'll find out. Guess is, if it involves Trump, the bite will be much less significant than the bark. But we'll find out. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
Looking forward to tomorrow, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Tomorrow's going to be huge.
If Ted Nugent were to join him, it would be huge and nuge.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.